This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham and Rod Mullins. We're going to talk NASCAR. It's been a couple weeks. We had the holidays off, and there's a lot of news to catch up on in the world of NASCAR. And Rod, let's start first some business news. NASCAR lays off, up to 100 employees, and a first round of layoffs. Well, that tells us there's going to be more coming. We've been talking, Rod, for a while about the NASCAR business model having some issues. This isn't good news for NASCAR fans and certainly for NASCAR employees in the sport right now.
No, it's not. It's a very scary thing for a lot of the fans right now to kind of be wondering what is the future of NASCAR. And on Friday, it came out, Jim Utter came out with a report on motorsports.com that NASCAR was laying off a sizable number of employees throughout all of its operations as part of a downsizing effort and a refocus of its resources. Now, as the weekend went on, what they had said was maybe a 5% portion of the working staff that they have with NASCAR would be laid off. Well, that put the number somewhere in a guessing game of anywhere between 50 to 100 employees. As the weekend went on, I came to find out that there were probably about 50 employees that were laid off, and it was a very emotional time for a lot of these employees. A lot of people that had worked around the sport for a number of years had said this was a very shocking experience that took place, and they were requesting that for a lot of these people that worked for NASCAR, some privacy and also please some understanding as to what was going on. Now, like I said, this was a company-wide layoff. It's somewhere around 50 is what we were told. But more than anything else, the way that I've heard this is it's coming out now. This plan is the layoffs. NASCAR is kind of making it sound like, well, in order to kind of streamline the operation, they're having to get rid of some people, mostly in order to make or at least to kind of pursue a non-binding offer to acquire the outstanding shares of International Speedway Corporation. Now, that, of course, the owners of Daytona Speedway and some of the other IST tracks around the country, Phoenix being one of those, and some stock and some others. But what they're trying to do is NASCAR is making that move to hold on to some of these tracks and also to kind of shore up. And if you're wondering about International Speedway Corporation, for those of you out there that listen to any of the NASCAR Monster Cup and Xfinity Cup races on the radio, if you still listen to the radio, MRN Radio, Motor Racing Network, is a part of International Speedway Corporation. So NASCAR is seeking to kind of consolidate more of this operation with this big buy. Of course, they just got finished with the ARCA series, and now they're making the move to get this consolidated in. And Chris, it's for a big reason. They're looking to get more money out of a potential sale from someone somewhere down the line or someone that is very interested in purchasing or at least purchasing stock or at least partial ownership in NASCAR itself.
So there's a lot of business news. Let's jump around a little bit. You talk about, you know, setting up the potential for purchasing or someone coming in as an investor. Is John Henry potentially one of those guys, the owner of the Red Sox, Boston Red Sox baseball team? And he owns, I mean, they own minor, the Fenway Sports Group owns minor league sports teams. They own a lot of things. Is it possible that Henry could come in at that level, or is he more of a guy thinking about perhaps starting his own team? What level of interest does he maybe have?
Well, John Henry right now has part ownership, at least some stock, or however you want to put it, with Jack Roush. So they have the Roush Fenway Racing Team. And so they have those three cars now. They have Ricky Stenhouse. They now have Ryan Newman. And so really they've got two cars right there out of that pack is what they've got. In the same time, Roush Fenway decided to pull out and completely not run anything this year in the Xfinity Series. So they are going to focus most of their attention on trying to run the Cup Series and the Monster Cup. And now John Henry has shown interest in buying a stake in NASCAR. He's potentially wanting to add to his sports empire. Like you said, it mentions the Boston Red Sox. I had no idea that he had partial ownership or at least a stake in the Liverpool Football Club, but he is wanting to expand those operations. And, you know, the Red Sox are profitable right now. They've been able to pull some things off here in the last few years in World Series championships and great playoff runs. And he's wanting to go and have his company to just move on and try to see maybe what the possibility would be of him being able to get a hold of NASCAR, at least a stake in it. He's 69 years old. He also, on top of that, he owns the Boston Globe, which has a net worth of $2.5 billion. And that's where he's made some of his money, but he's made most of his fortune in commodities trading. So he's probably well aware of what NASCAR is worth and what could be out there. So it's possible. He could get a stake in this, and you could see someone maybe move toward what the Formula One side of things are, as it is in Europe, and the way that they have things in the Formula One series. You could be looking at this with John Henry. Who knows?
Let's stick with some more NASCAR business news and some, well, a Fed's raid that leads to the news with Chip Ganassi Racing shutting down the Xfinity team and a Cup sponsorship. Give us the latest on what's going on behind the scenes there.
Well, this is the second team that is shut down. I mentioned already that Roush Fenway is not going to run an Xfinity Series team this year. But the strange thing that happened right before Christmas, the FBI decided they were going to go in and raid the home of DC Solar and their CEO, the chief executive officer. Now, the Jeff and Paulette Karpoff, who are the owners of DC Solar, and the Martinez Clipper Baseball Club, they've taken a big stake in the Chip Ganassi Racing and also with Kyle Larson. And so, according to a statement that was issued after the raid, the Karpoff family was surprised and disappointed with the action taken by the government earlier in that week. It appears to be something that's related to an ongoing tax dispute more than anything else. DC Solar, if you're wondering who we're talking about, it's a solar power company. They're wanting to go, and I think this all kind of took place during the time of when President Obama was trying to encourage businesses to get involved with solar power and being able to put anybody into a practical situation where they could go in and own a solar power installation service, or at least produce solar panels where they could go and sell to potential customers. But now 20 of these agents went in. They broke through the front door of the Karpoff's residence, and they went in. They had vehicles, items that were seized from the home. But more than anything else, this is something that just sent ripples through NASCAR. And then Chip Ganassi Racing finally admitted, we're not going to run an Xfinity car next year. And that's bad news for Ross Chastain, who had done such a tremendous job in the Xfinity Series of proving his work. Now he is out. Chip Ganassi Racing issued a statement right after that happened and said, we've received little in the way of facts. We're watching the situation. We're closely monitoring it. But then when all of it seemed to hit the fan, as we'll call it, due to a lack of sponsorship funding, we will cease operation of the number 42 Xfinity team in 2019. And they call that a difficult decision. And it all has to do with that raid on the DC Solar CEO's home and taking it proper.
So with Ganassi out of Xfinity and Roush Fenway out, what does that mean for Xfinity, you know, kind of across the board? I mean, that's two significant groups that are out of the series for 2019 at least.
Well, I think in one way it's going to go and it's going to kind of open the field up a little bit more to some of these smaller teams that have been trying to compete and have not really had the luck and the opportunity to maybe succeed like some of the teams like Roush Fenway and then also the Chip Ganassi. For them, though, for Roush Fenway and Chip Ganassi Racing, it's been a proving ground for their drivers. It's a stepping stone, so to speak, to get these guys prepared and then be able to send them on to the Cup Series. And that's what it has been for so long. And you've also had some times of where Kyle Larson has come in. He has raced in the Xfinity car, and he did give a little bit of some help there with the younger drivers. But I think this is going to open up a little bit more for some of these smaller teams that have been struggling for a number of years to try to go and maybe get a foothold into this and really establish the Xfinity Series as to what it was in the beginning, and that was that major stepping stone for some of these drivers to be able to make it to the next step, and then, of course, being the Monster Cup Series. For Roush Fenway, this is my opinion about it. I think Roush Fenway right now, with what's been going on with their team over the last few years, they probably need to focus on the Cup Series because they have started picking back up, but they have not really gained a whole lot of information and knowledge, so to speak, that would help them out in the Cup Series. Ricky Stenhouse has been an exceptional driver for them. Of course, they parted with Trevor Bayne, and now they've got Ryan Newman coming in to drive the pitch car this year. So you're going to have two experienced drivers in that team, and maybe it'll give Roush Fenway a chance to get back to the basics of what they need to be in order to be a championship team. And then, on top of that, we can't overlook Chip Ganassi because I think it also gives Kyle Larson a chance to maybe focus a little bit more on the Cup Series as well and maybe finishing races as opposed to splitting time in the driver's seat and taking that information and telemetry that they get from the track and so forth to prepare for the next weekend or the next race. I think that's going to make a difference, and I think it's going to force Kyle Larson to become maybe an even better driver than what he already is.
Let's do one more bit of business news, so to speak, and go back to Roush Fenway for a second. New sponsorship for Ryan Newman. So some good news there for Ryan. Talk about that.
Well, this surprised me. I really wasn't expecting this. They have been talking for a little while, but we need to let folks know Ryan Newman will not be driving the Wienermobile on Saturday or Sunday afternoons when he's racing. And folks, if you've seen that Wienermobile, it's a very menacing-looking vehicle when you see it, especially coming down the interstate. But no, he'll be driving the number 6 Oscar Mayer Ford Mustang this year at the Daytona 500. And for Ryan Newman, it kind of gives him a chance to be getting back into a Ford. He'll be driving and paired with winning the owner in NASCAR with Jack Roush. And for him, this Oscar Mayer Ford Mustang, I tell you, it's a good looking car from what they have displayed already in some of the promotional things so far. They're going to be able to put some things on there, put some things on the car, promoting bacon, cold cuts, hot dogs with the NASCAR fans. That's a plus there because up until this point, Smithfield has been one of the dominant businesses when it came to the meat, the bacon, and so forth about that. But I'm sure that Ryan Newman will probably prefer fans not to sing his name with the Oscar Mayer song.
You can see a TV commercial coming out of this, though, with Newman going around a track in that Wienermobile, at least a souped-up version of that Wienermobile, and that can actually have some traction, I would imagine.
Yeah, I had this really, when I first saw the car, and then I heard about this pairing of Oscar Mayer, the strange thing of this flashback came back to me to the early 80s and the time that I watched Burt Reynolds, Jim Neighbors, and Ned Beatty in Stroker 8. Clyde Torkel's Chicken Pit, the fastest chicken in the South. So, I mean, it kind of scared me at first, and then I'm like, well, it's kind of a good pairing here, so we'll see how they do. We'll see how it all ends up after at the end of 2019.
My driver has a first name. It's R-Y-A-N. That's how it'll go, so.
We'll go with that.
One bit of news in terms of movement, Daniel Suarez joining Stuart Haas. This is some pretty big news.
Yeah, this is going to be a big news right here with Daniel Suarez joining up with Stuart Haas. He has signed on to drive the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Ford this year for 2019. The Mexican driver, he turned 27. Back early part of January, he's going to be in the number 41 Ford Mustang. He'll have sponsorship in there from Haas Automation, Aris International. Those are the folks behind the modem that they have. And then he'll be joining Kevin Harvick, Eric Almirola, and Cliff Boyer. Now, it's going to be a plus for him because, these three guys right here, Kevin Harvick, especially Kevin Harvick, Eric Almirola, they were front runners to get into the championship. They were there, and Kevin Harvick made it into that championship series race down there at Homestead, Florida. But Bowyer's still on that bubble, and I think he's getting close there. We'll have to see what Bowyer does this year. But I really like Daniel Suarez. He's a driver that is very concerned about going out there and pleasing the fans. He got himself in some trouble here back about a year or two ago when he lost the Subway sponsorship while driving for Joe Gibbs, because he went out and gave Dunkin' Donuts to the fans out in the infield one morning before the race, and they did this for NBC, and he got in trouble for it. And Subway just did not like that happening, and so he ended up losing a sponsor out of it. And another reason why I like Daniel Suarez more than anything else, he's a Volkswagen freak. He loves Volkswagens. Matter of fact, sent a little thing to him the other night on Instagram. He was showing all these different Volkswagens that his dad, who I think he has a salvage yard down in Mexico, they go and they put together these Volkswagens, whether they're the Beetle or the Vans or whatever, and they restore them back. And I saw one of the pictures on there the other night, and lo and behold, Daniel Suarez replied back to me, and that was a little bit of a shock. I just really didn't expect it, but for him, Daniel Suarez, I think, is going to be close, I think, getting that first win in NASCAR, and I believe there'll be a big pull for him, especially of an international flavor, so to speak.
So now, speaking of flavor, let's go to some on-the-track news here. Great segue opportunity here. You set it up so well. Right? We didn't plan that out. The Chili Bowl. It's in Tulsa, 355 drivers. Huge event. And so take us to the Chili Bowl there, Rod.
Oh, yeah, Chili Bowl. And here we've been talking about Oscar Mayer. Wow. Well, here we go. If you're not familiar with the Chili Bowl, Lucas Oil sponsors it. It's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Get this, folks, 355 drivers from 33 states and 5 countries will be converging on Tulsa for this big Chili Bowl event, and they have it at the River Spirit Expo Center. It gets bigger and bigger each time with these drivers, and, you know, these are dirt cars. They are racing. They are going, I mean, they're going super fast, but you have a lot of these NASCAR Cup drivers who are still so interested in this. You know, we'll probably have a chance to see Casey Kane. And when I'm saying Casey Kane, he's going to be an owner this year in the open wheel, the dirt cars, and so forth. So there'll be a chance there. And he's going to race, according to this, the release that I got. There's going to be some other drivers involved. Kyle Larson cut his teeth driving on dirt track, as well as some others in there. If I'm not mistaken, I think Christopher Bell and Justin Allgaier has done some as well. J.J. Yeley. Chase Briscoe, I mentioned Stenhouse before, Landon Castle, Alex Bowman, Casey Kane, Tanner Berryhill. They have a complete workup of the schedule. You can find that, and you can even watch it on NAS TV. It'll be on Saturday night, the main event. This is a six-day event, Chris. This is something that they have to go through all of these eliminations and stuff, 5 days of qualifying with only the top two drivers each night locking into Saturday's main event instead of three as in the past. So that means you'll lock in 10 drivers with the remaining 14 starters coming from Saturday night's being main event.
That's something to keep your appetite whetted as we're waiting for Daytona in about a month. So that's good for fans out there. Wanted to end the podcast with some sad news, but some reflective news, I guess. J.D. Gibbs. Folks know this. He passed away last week. 4-year battle with a degenerative neurological disease. He was 49 years old. He raced for a while with Joe Gibbs Racing, of course, but then, you know, led the group from about 19 years run at the top of Joe Gibbs Racing, and instrumental with you know, the titles that the Joe Gibbs Racing team won: Tony Stewart, Kyle Busch, Bobby Labonte. Talk about the passing and the impact that J.D. Gibbs had on the racing world.
This has been a hard hit for a lot of people. You really can't help but love Joe Gibbs. And this is, you know, Washington Redskins, when he was coaching, from the time that he has gone in, he's Joe Gibbs is kind of like that fatherly figure, so to speak. And when J.D. Gibbs joined the team and started helping out, you know, the co-founder of the racing team with his dad, not only did he do some racing on the side, but then he started kind of moving into the business world. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, we got this sad news that he had a degenerative neurological disease. We don't know exactly. There's nothing beneficial about it. But it was enough to start taking away his, I guess, his rationale, his thinking ability, his ability for speech, and some other things. And it really reduced this man, who really stood tall in the pits and around the NASCAR world and was very highly thought of, down to, you know, in this pitiful shape. J.D. Gibbs, of course, was president of Joe Gibbs Racing from 1997 to 2015. Of course, he did with leadership, held Bobby Labonte to a title. But, you know, I think the big news out of this is what it's done to Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin has said, and Denny Hamlin being a Virginia driver from Chesterfield, he has said that Denny Hamlin said that J.D. Gibbs, rather, took a chance on him by signing him to a deal years ago. And it's one of those things of where Denny Hamlin has been deeply affected by this. He tweeted out just the other night about this. He said, his car, his number, his signature above my door. I will always be grateful for what his family has done for mine and the opportunity that he gave him 14 years ago. Now, some people might think Joe Gibbs had a lot to do with it, but it was actually J.D. Gibbs. And so, you know, it's going to be a thing of trying to get used to things. Although J.D. had not been at the track in a number of years because of the severity of the illness, but still that presence was always felt down there somewhere in the pits, especially with Joe Gibbs Racing. And you know, he's had an influence over on some other drivers as well. Tony Stewart, he helped in there with Tony Stewart. There early on when Stewart was racing for Joe Gibbs Racing. This is really going to affect this team. This is almost on the level of what happened with Rick Hendrick when Ricky was killed in the plane crash down near Martinsville here several years ago. It's going to have the same kind of impact, I think, on the sport, because this just goes to show you how important, or at least how some of it feels, family is involved in the NASCAR world.
Yeah, sad news. Our condolences from AFP, of course, to the Gibbs family on the passing of J.D. Gibbs. So as we wrap up the podcast here, Rod, I mentioned Daytona is not that far off. I think February 17th is the date for the Daytona 500. If you could give our listeners a sense of what we can look forward to the next few weeks. I mean, there's all the trot, you know, the qualifying and the races and everything else leading up to the Daytona 500. What's the schedule like the next few weeks down in Daytona?
Well, leading up to Daytona, here's one for you that kind of took a lot of people by surprise. You know, usually you have the NASCAR media tour down in Charlotte, you know, with that last year and so forth. I got the word this past here in the last week that there will be no more NASCAR media tour in Charlotte. They have kind of pulled back on that. Don't know what the reasons are with NASCAR doing that. A lot of the drivers will be, I guess, represented in their own home, I guess, facilities, their buildings and stuff, the garage that they have there around Charlotte, Huntersville, North Carolina, and some other places. And so that's going to be a hard pill to swallow for a lot of the fans and also a lot of the media, too, because that was the first step on understanding where some of these teams were going to be going into the Daytona 500. For some of the other things that's going to be leading up to Daytona, you've got the 24-hour Rolex race that will be taking place here in just probably about two more weeks, maybe a week or two, something like that. They'll have the 24 hours of the Rolex race there at Daytona. They'll be building up, and of course, Speed Weeks will be taking place there about the middle part of February. And so we're going to have to wait and see, of course. The big talk right now is going to be the restrictor plate, how they're going to do things with the the new setup on the cars, the restrictor plates. Already some of the testing has been going on. You've got you've had some testing, some tire testing going on out in California with Mark Truex and Joe Gibbs Racing. They've been out there doing some tire testing. But the big question is going to be, is this aero package really going to fit the bill for NASCAR fans? Because there are drivers that say that this is going to bunch everybody up, and this is what scares me again. Being at a Daytona and a Talladega, everybody's bunched up. If one person makes a move, takes that air off of one of the cars or the downforce, we've got an instant calamity that can happen very quickly. Now, NASCAR says that they've got this thing thought out. We'll have to see it to believe it when it comes to Daytona 500 time. You'll get a taste of that probably with the Xfinity race on that Saturday before. And also, probably we'll get an idea of how the schemes and the drafting is going to be with the Truck Series. They'll be racing there as well on that Friday before. And you'll get an idea somewhere along the line. How is it going to be? It's anybody's guess, especially when you go to Daytona. I mean, last year, we would have thought Austin Dillon would have pulled off a win of the Daytona 500, and then all the people out there almost, you know, screaming voodoo to a certain degree of Austin Dillon winning a race in the three car, made popular by Dale Earnhardt, and then the story of the penny on the dashboard, very similar to what happened to Dale Earnhardt back when he won his first Daytona 500 back in the late 90s. There was a lot of things that felt like it was scripted for a movie back then. We'll probably have to see if that's going to happen again this coming Daytona 500 year in about 3 or 4 weeks is what it's going to be. So it's getting close.
It is right around the corner, and we're getting you ramped up here on AFP. We're getting ourselves ramped up. You've got to get to work here. So I want to thank Ron. Thank you, Ron, today for your time, and we'll talk again next week as we get closer to the start of the 2019 season.
Okay, appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.